And thanks for joining me this evening. I'm Aaron Hay, and you're listening to Mizzou Music on Classical 90.5 FM. I am joined by phone, as most of my interviews have been these days, with Mizzou's assistant teaching professor of voice, Stephen Jempson. Stephen, how are you?
I'm good, Aaron. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. So we wanted to come on and talk about, a couple of things. The first thing I think that listeners are most interested in is that during the current coronavirus situation that we have going on right now, a lot of news has been given, at least in the early stages, to like choir rehearsals and vocal artists in general, and how that can maybe lead to larger amounts of spread of the virus itself. And I'm wondering how the School of Music is tackling that situation with voice lessons and one-on-one rehearsals.
It's one of those, yeah, you're right. It's one of those things that we have to be very, very worried about. So what we're going through and what we're looking at are we looking at studies that are being done in Europe, mostly Germany, and a study that has been funded partially by the National Association of Teachers of Singing, NATS, which is our big group, also the Pan American Vocalology Association, and believe it or not, Actors Equity. And what they have found out is at the early stages when these studies started in March, we realized that singing was going to be a problem because we're using our instrument, our voices, more than you normally would when you speak. We are what is considered super spreaders. So the 6 feet that everybody has heard of and everybody is trying to adhere to doesn't apply for us when we're singing. So the issue is you're talking more like 15 feet, and that makes things very, very difficult for us. Also, the issue is that you've got to have a room that's large enough to be able to handle a student that is singing, an accompanist, and a teacher, and have them all feel comfortable in that room. So what we're doing is we're going through the routine that, depending on the size of the room, there has to be 30 minutes of singing, and then the room has to be cleared for 20 minutes to be able to allow an exchange of air into the room to make it safe. Now, that is for individual lessons. For choir, it's become a little bit more difficult. Choir, we are now requiring people to sing with masks, and I don't know if you've seen them, but there is a mask that was actually made by the wardrobe costumers in Broadway, and it's called the singer's mask. It is a little bit more rigid than, well, it's a lot more rigid than the typical three-ply mask that you would see out on the street. Think of it as adding a duck bill, a small duck bill to the face.
Okay.
So it actually does allow the singers to sing. It's made out of muslin, which is just a strong cotton. It is not 100%. It does close all the way through, so you can actually breathe through it and you can actually sing through it, but it's better than most other masks. So at choir, what we're doing is we have broken our groups into smaller groups, smaller sets, probably around 12 to 15 people. They're able to sing in that room for about 30 minutes, and then they go outdoors, or they will conduct their rehearsals outdoors as well. So if you are wandering around campus, you can go into a parking garage and hear people sing. And that's what the choir is doing. Vocal, what we're doing right now is we're doing sort of an on-off thing where 1 week you will have an in-person lesson where it's like 20 minutes where we discuss diction, we discuss breathing, we discuss anything that doesn't involve singing, and then we go into a large room, and we are working with the accompanist for 30 minutes. Then that room is vacant for another 20. Then the other weeks, we are doing Zoom lessons. So each of the four voice area teachers here at Mizzou have practice rooms that are reserved for our students in particular. They sign up for them. And what they do is they get onto the network either through an Ethernet cable or through Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. I am going to start asking my students to use an external USB mic because the sound is so much better than what you would get in a tablet or a laptop.
Sure.
And then they have a recording of their accompaniment. They have a track that they will sing along with. Nice thing about a Zoom lesson is we can go for the full 50 minutes.
Okay.
And then, of course, that room, since it's a small practice room, only one person can be in that room. And then it is, once again, cleared for about 30 minutes until the next person can do it.
Interesting. And so then when we talk about, like, using the voice and how and how mouths and using your palate and all of that, are you still able to... Like, some of that requires instruction, and you need to be able to see the person's mouth in order to guide them through that, I would imagine. Is that an issue with the mask then, or...?
The nice thing about having that half hour in the large room or having the Zoom lesson is that the students can sing without a mask.
Okay.
So we can sing that. There are masks that are available. I have one. It's called the Clear Mask.
Sure.
And it's basically a mask that is made out of plastic material with foam. And you can actually see everything. It's a little difficult to sing in, but when I'm doing my diction class, I will use this mask to show how the mouth and the teeth and the tongue should form for particular vowels or for particular sounds. But in terms of choir, if we're outside and we have a good enough distancing between everybody, you can allow the students to sing without a mask.
Okay.
So we're doing the best we can, and so far everybody is being very, very careful. Everybody's adhering to the rules, and I feel like there's been some good progress going on.
That's great. You know, it's difficult, but I'm really glad that the School of Music is able to move forward, even in the way that it is now, to make sure that we're still educating these students and moving them, you know, further down the educational line.
Right. And one of the things that is going on through Zoom, as we all know, Zoom was basically set up as a conference tool. And anytime you have something like this that is just the straight feed, we're going to have a lag.
Right.
And what a lot of people have been doing now is a lot of companies and organizations have been developing software to allow people to use Zoom for the visual, for the video part, but then the audio has been broken down into a different codec where the latency or the lag virtually disappears. So there's three or four different programs that people are using. I know that Columbia College, for example, is using a setup where everybody is in a different room. So the accompanist is in a different room with a microphone and a mixer board, and they're plugged straight into the internet for Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
The singer is in another room with the exact same equipment, and then the teacher is in another room with the exact same equipment. Everybody has a monitor. So the video is instantaneous, and the feed is instantaneous. Yeah. Those are things that we may have to look into if this pandemic continues longer and longer. But right now, Zoom is working well.
Okay. Well, that's great. Well, that brings us up to speed there with what's going on in the department. Let's talk about what we were initially going to discuss here, and that is, more vocal music, of course, but the intersection of contemporary commercial music and how that applies to classical music and classical vocal work.
Yeah. So when we talk about contemporary commercial music, or CCM, as it's better called,
mm-hmm.
it has become a better way of saying musical theater, rather than what we would normally think of as musical theater. The reason is because there are so many different shows that are on Broadway right now, and whatever you listen to on the radio, whether it be a classical, whether it be rock, jazz, folk, country, grunge, hip hop, as it's all found on Broadway these days.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody knows about Hamilton, so you now have the rap portion in there. But a lot of people are not familiar with, for example, the musical Beetlejuice mm-hmm. that came out. Beetlejuice, the main character, the first actor to play Beetlejuice was a man named Alex Brightman, and he had to have that really raspy type of feeling, and he had to sing that way and speak that way, and he had to do that 8 shows a week. So the question is how do you do something like that? And it involves training. So one of the things that I really love that's been going on these days is there's been more of, one, a technical side of it, because we've all known that the vocal folds vibrate in a particular way. They go in and out, they go up and down, and then there's a little sort of a mucosal wave that goes on all at the same time. And with these little instruments that are about the length of the width of your thumbnail, we are able to create huge, huge sounds and different sounds as well. So what's been happening is we've been getting more and more into the technical aspect of how the voice works, and then being able to apply those techniques, those basic techniques, into different styles of music. The main reason we do this is because it's more helpful for a singer to understand different styles and to be able to do them correctly, mostly for the reason that that gives them more opportunities to sing. So if you are just training as an operatic baritone, other pieces are going to be a little more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
An example of something like that was when they decided to do a revival, a recording of West Side Story. This was when Bernstein was still alive, and they decided to do it completely with opera singers. So Jose Carreras was playing Tony, and Kirita Kanawa was playing Maria. And these are people whose lives have been steeped solely in opera. And the things you got were not exactly what you would want.
Okay.
It was a little jarring. So the more familiar that we can get our students to be in these kinds of things, it makes them more marketable.
So you're trying to build a more rounded vocal student coming
right
out of the college. Okay.
Right. And these days, one of the things that we are hopefully all thinking about is more inclusion, more diversity. We have, as a faculty, not just in the voice, but through the entire faculty, have realized that the system of classical music is, unfortunately, inherently racist. It is mostly Western, European, white, male musical composers mm-hmm. and musical theory styles. And we're trying to, as much as we can, build out of that, realize that there are ways that we can expand through that. And an easy way for us to expand through that is to take a look at the works of underrepresented composers. So that can be composers of color. That can be women composers. That can be composers of non-gender, LGBT composers.
Mm-hmm.
So that also allows us to take a look at different, not only different styles, but different languages as well. So we're looking now at singing more Spanish, singing Czech, singing Russian, singing in as many different languages as we can find, because it gives our students a little more, a more rounded taste of what we're wanting them to find.
How do you balance that with the more traditional curriculum
Okay. Well, first in the singing wise, what we're wanting to do is, first of all, we're with any of our students, whether or not they're doing classical or they're jazz or musical theater, whatever, we want to make sure they have a good solid foundation in what they're doing. We want to make sure that the vocal production is free, easy, and efficient. And our standard of teaching, using the techniques that we have learned through classical singing, has stood the test of time. You can go to any musical theater singer, and they'll say, "I always work my classical. I always make sure that I'm breathing in the manner that I would." Things may change a little bit, but the general gist of making sure that the breath is solid, a little deeper than normal for normal people, and is consistent underneath the vocal mechanism is what we're wanting to strive for. The change is what happens above. In terms of curriculum and how we sort of match that around, it's a little easier in the vocal area because there's only one spot within their time when they perform for us, for the vocal faculty, when we actually ask them to sing in the four major languages. And that is what we call the barrier. And the barrier happens at their second semester of the sophomore year. And it's showing that they can move from underclassmen to upperclassmen. And we ask them to sing a piece in French, a piece in Italian, a piece in German, and that they have worked with us on that piece. And then what we do is we ask them to pick a piece in English that they have worked on all by themselves. And it shows that they can learn repertoire. It shows that they have a good handle on repertoire, and it shows that they can take the concepts that we work on and take them into a practice room and do it on their own. For our education singers, for our education students, that's really, really important because this is what they're going to have to do when they go out to schools and they're teaching high school singers. They need to be able to pick rep. And for the performance majors, it's them being able to start thinking about how they're going to put together their own programs. That's the only time that we require them to sing in the four major languages. We do work them in the four major languages, but we also give them the opportunity now to go into other ones. So if you're okay in German and you've done well there and you want to now attack a piece in Czech, do some Dvorak, or if you want to do some Rachmaninoff and work in Russian, it gives you the opportunity to start working in those languages. One of the nice things about Mizzou is that we have a good number of students that come from countries that speak Portuguese. Mm-hmm. So we're now being able to sort of cross train with our fellow students. And they're able to go in and say, "I need to be able to sing a little bit better in English. I'd be more than happy to help you with your Portuguese." So it's a nice cross feed, and it works out well for them. And once again, they're getting more education by looking at different varieties.
Basically, as musical theater and Broadway expands its horizons, you're expecting to see more students take an interest in these modern theatrical works and in more obscure works from less recent times.
Right, yeah. Those people who are familiar with musical theater know that there are particular ages in musical theater. First of all, musical theater came out of the more operetta tradition, married with the more American tradition of jazz and blues and folk tunes and a little bit of ballet, if you're talking about Golden Age theater. And that also goes into the African American tradition because that's where we got jazz and blues. So the different ages or different styles of musical theater depend on which era you're talking about. I mean, most people are familiar with Rodgers and Hammerstein and Lerner and Lowe. We call that golden age because at that time, the people who were singing them could easily slightly modify their singing style and work on an operatic stage. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, a lot of them did. The original Emile Debec for South Pacific was an operatic singer named Enzio Pinza. But then as the social mores changed and as the taste of the audience changed, theater changed. So you then had the stuff from the 60s. You had Pippin, you had Hair, you had O Calcutta, you had Godspell. And that was a very early Stephen Schwartz doing Godspell. Mm-hmm. And you now take a look at the rest of his work that also includes Wicked. You take a look at Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, which is Andrew Lloyd Webber, then go to Superstar, and then go to Phantom of the Opera, go to Evita, go to Sunset Boulevard, and you see that the composer can stay the same, but the styles and what's being seen on the stage will change. Now we have things as diverse as Moving Out, which is all on Billy Joel. We have folk musicals. We've got a, let's see, The Gentleman's Guide for Love and Murder, which is all sort of tongue-in-cheek, almost Gilbert and Sullivan operetta. Beetlejuice, as we talked about. Hamilton, as we've talked about. And so the styles change. So it's important for students to understand and singers to understand what they need to do to make those changes or modifications in their voice to be able to handle something like that.
So it all comes back then to building, again, a more rounded graduate. When they leave here, they can take that education and educate others in that way, or they can move on into a career in performance where they're really ready to tackle these various musical styles and confront a Broadway that is changing, you know, almost on a monthly basis, as you say, when you've got musicals that are concentrated on jazz or folk music or hip hop or, you know, whatever may come next whenever the lights of Broadway again get turned on and
right.
We actually get more musical theater.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's something that I have been a big proponent of in my career, not only as a teacher, but as a singer as well. I love the standards of what we would normally call the Great American Songbook. So that would be anything from the Cole Porter pieces to the Jimmy Van Heusen things. Those have been dear to my heart. I love to sing them, and it's one of those things that you have to learn how to actually do that. Yes, there is a different feel for it, but there's different ways to approach vowels, different ways to approach a phrase than you wouldn't do in classical music. It gives me another outlet to be able to perform and to be able to enjoy what I'm doing. And that's one of the things that I've always wanted to help my students with. So if they want to go in a different direction, I'm more than happy to have them go in that direction. And it's important for me as the instructor to understand how to help them in that way.
Well, that's great, Stephen. While we're chatting, do you have any performances coming up? Are you taking part in any of the Mizzou mashups for Mondays with students or anything like that?
We're looking into possibly doing some Mizzou mashups. But one thing that I can tell you about is an accompanist here in town named Harry Beckett, fabulous accompanist, very, very well-versed in jazz. Harry and I have been collaborating, doing a lot of the Great American Songbook stuff, and we are going to be starting a YouTube channel called Jepson and Beckett. And every other week, we're probably going to be releasing two or three different pieces. Right now, it's in the planning stages. partially because it's just hard to get together and do things because of the pandemic.
Of
we have to make sure that everybody's safe. But for those people who are interested in what that's going to sound like, you can always go to my SoundCloud page and listen to some of those pieces. So it's just soundcloud.com, and then just look for Stephen B., as in boy, Jepson. And then I also have then we're going to put a Facebook page in as well. So hopefully when all of this is over, people can come out and see us at a club or a coffee shop and enjoy some live music and somebody who can approach these things in a little bit more of an educated vein, but still have fun doing it.
That's fantastic. That's great. We look forward to, of course, look forward to that, and we look forward to seeing whatever you can put out on YouTube and social media. We'd love to see that too.
Right, and I hope people were able to catch the quote unquote concert that the choirs did recently. Mm-hmm. It was just wonderful to be able to hear singers actually sing together. You know, it's something that we've all been missing.
Yeah, any live performance would be great right now.
Exactly. Oh yeah. Yep.
But yeah, it's definitely nice to see, and it's a great thing that the School of Music is doing, putting on these shows. And yeah, there's one every Monday for the foreseeable future. So well, Stephen, thanks so much for taking some time out of your day and talking to us about what the School of Music is up to and how you're working to make better musicians every single day.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to talk to you, Aaron.